Welcome to my Blog Talk Radio show, Love Your Music. I'm your host, Margot Joy Denader. I am a singer, songwriter, artist, coach, and the author of the book, The Art of Living a Life You Love. I am super happy to have Kevin Tinto as my guest. Tune in for a 30-minute conversation about how you can become a best-selling author and hear about the best-selling books of Kevin's during the show. Welcome, Kevin.
Hey, Margot, thanks for having me. Happy to be here.
Oh, I'm so happy to have you on. I'm so glad that we met you at the literary event here in Marin in May, thanks to Kathleen Woodcock. That was so much fun meeting you there, and I knew right away that I wanted to have you on my show to talk about your books. And thank you so much for bringing the first book to the event, and I just, you know, we brought it home. My husband and I brought it home, and I also got one for my brother and gave it to him. And Dudley and I have read all three of the books now in the trilogy, and oh my gosh, you are such an amazing writer. I couldn't put it down. I just, you know, that was my only complaint. I couldn't put it down. And luckily I had enough time to read it during that time when I was doing it. But thank you for writing them.
Yeah, well, you know, what that's sort of, you know, in writing, it's a long process when you get to a couple of books under your belt and you get to around the third book. And what I wrote was a trilogy, and I've written other stuff that's unpublished. But when I wrote Revelation, which was the last book in the series, what I thought about is in the world of Kindle, you know, you've got about two paragraphs, maybe a couple of pages to hook somebody. They move on, right? If they're Kindle Unlimited, which is like your frequent flyer club, they might, you know, they're going to read a couple of sentences, and if they don't like it, they're going to move on because they can take 10 books free at any one time. So I thought about the Pirates of the Caribbean ride at Disneyland or Disney World and how that ride, you just keep moving, right? In other words, okay, here's the cannonball ship in it. Nobody stops and says, okay, the cannon fires this far at this rate of speed. It just continues to move. So when I got to Revelation, and I had done that sort of intuitively with Ice and Genesis, my goal was to keep the story moving, keep people engaged with characters to the point where they couldn't put it down. And those are the reviews that I loved, which is, okay, thanks, Kevin, you cost me 3 days of work. I couldn't put it down. It's 3 a.m. I kept reading. And that's the key to, if you want to be a writer, is writing things, in my opinion, that move along, that keep people engaged and don't sit in a chair and, you know, start to discuss details on characters or scene or whatever. That I think that bores people in today's world, and so you got to keep the book moving.
Well, you know what you just said about the Pirates of the Caribbean, that is so interesting. I can really relate to that because at Disneyland, that is one of my favorite rides to go on, and part of it is because you're right. It's like it's one amazing scene after another, you know, and it's just amazing feeling that you're having, the feelings that it brings up, that, ooh, we're scared, or, oh, we're going to go over this waterfall or whatever, you know. So, yeah.
Well, I think with writing, you know, one of the things, and there's many things that are important, but is you have to engage, your characters have to engage with the reader on an emotional level. They have to, you know, you're going to like some characters, you're going to dislike other characters, you're going to like the story. I think I said this at our literary dinner, which is a lot of times when you're writing, it's a lot like Seinfeld's show. And what Seinfeld said is they said, you know, what's your show all about? He said, it's about nothing. Because the reality is people tuned in for the characters. They love those. If you just put those characters into any situation, people love to watch the interaction of the characters. So, you know, the characters for me kind of come alive in my head. They develop their own personality. And What I try to do is have, you know, characters that have, there's an action and then there's a reaction, right? And characters don't mm-hmm. always do, if you're real about the characters, they don't always do what you want. And again, this is probably a story I told at Literary Dinner, which is, you know, in your book, you may want to have character A, which in my case might be Jack Hobson, go by helicopter across the, you know, somewhere in Afghanistan, and if for Jack, he's going to say, "I'm not getting on that Russian helicopter. That thing's going to fall apart and crash." Mm-hmm. So he goes, "No way, I'm getting on that helicopter." So what he says is, "Look, I'll walk. I'll take two guys and we'll hike and we'll get there day after tomorrow." Well, in 48 hours, he's pinned down in gunfire by rebels of some kind, and he's saying, "You know, why didn't I just get on the helicopter?" So if you're true to the characters, and you follow what's important to them, a lot of times it makes the story better. You don't know exactly where it's going to go, always. But at the end of the day, and humor is important. I thought it's a very important component.
Yeah.
If I read a lot of Kindle books, and I read tons of them, mm-hmm. or I'll start to read them, it just simply don't have any humor. They start off, they go through this whole sort of, intro, and there's no humor. I try to make, you know, even I try to make things fun and have humor. And one of the things, I mean, I've done a lot of stuff in my life. I've climbed a lot of mountains. I've dove a lot of wrecks. I mean, you name it, I've pretty much done it. I've been mm-hmm. close to death many times, and I've had people die on events that I was on. And ultimately what happens to survive it is you develop a gallows sense of humor. And a lot mm-hmm. of people who don't do that stuff, it's shocking. But so I included a lot of that in ICE, you know, sort of that gallows mm-hmm. humor, how people cope in very tough situations.
Well, you know, I have to say that character development was just amazing. You're right. I mean, I had emotional connections to all the characters. And you're right, some of them I loved, like Leah and Jack and the other people that worked with Leah and so on and so forth. But then there was also the ones that you didn't like, you know. And oh, my gosh. But you got emotional reactions for sure and responses all of those.
Yeah, I think to some extent, now I come from a family of writers. I have my Uncle Terry and my cousin Colleen. These are best-selling authors. My Uncle Terry's a bush pilot in Alaska. My cousin mm-hmm. Colleen's actually one of the top, Colleen Reese is one of the top Christian writers on the planet, you know, lives up mm-hmm. in Washington. I think sometimes that is in the DNA. You know, your ability to write characters that you innately understand are going to hook the reader is probably not something that's necessarily taught, but it's just something that you do. And mm-hmm. It's funny how some people related to characters and some people didn't, and or some people like characters for a certain reason and some people didn't. And as I thought about my characters, you know, I wanted some, particularly Leah. I mean, she's got a very serious arc in her mm-hmm. in this period of time during these three books. Mm-hmm. And, you know, similar like Lord of the Rings, I mean, you know, these characters started out one way and they ended up completely somewhere else. So, you know, it was interesting to be able to take characters and in the case of Leah, take somebody who's maybe a little bit self-absorbed and she's an archaeologist and, you know, basically she has a passion for what she's doing. And, mm-hmm. and probably a little bit more on the liberal side of the bench. And mm-hmm. at the end of the day, you know, she, when you're put in a situation, where your life or lives of people that you really care about, are being ended or are in danger of being ended, mm-hmm. how people can change, you know, to protect themselves. And I don't know, maybe this is me having been to places around the world where wars had taken place and understanding, you know, what people went through to survive.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, I think that was one of the things that, for me, it was really amazing about the timing of when I read your book was perfect, too, because I had just been reading a book by another independent author is a friend of mine now. She became a friend by me having her on my show last year. Her name's Kristen Helmstetter. And she has a series of books called The Coffee Self-Talk Books. And one of the books, though, is dealing mostly with creativity. And she didn't even think she was creative at first, you know, and she is super creative. But it's just, you know, creativity is so important. And the fact that you're doing this and showing people that, ooh, look at it this way, or maybe look at it this way. And my point is that your book came at a perfect time because she was just talking about in that book of hers about creativity, about doing things that you wouldn't normally do, or going to a movie or reading a book or something that wouldn't be your typical kind to read. And I don't usually read thrillers, you know. But I got the book. I started reading it. I was already hooked at the prologue. I was going, oh, my gosh, I love this. I can't wait to see what's going to happen. And to me, it really helped me understand, and this is going to sound a little crazy, I know it is, but it helped me understand how big and vast and different the world is. You know, I mean, how compared to where each of us are used to living, you know, our little circle of the world where we're used to being. But, yeah, it just, I don't know. You know, that's why I love that picture that I put in the poster and in the slideshow of you with your computer and the globe right there in the front. It's a constant reminder of that. Wow, we live in a really big world with a lot of different types of people and a lot of different beliefs. And
yeah. Well, I think that, you know, as somebody who is an adventurer, you know, and you end up, you do end up with some interesting situations. You get this, yeah, you step outside of your normal life. And, for instance, last year I was hiking the Rim Trail, which is a trail that goes along the very top of the peaks around Lake Tahoe. And
uh-huh.
I've done a ton of backpacking, you know, but I'm getting pretty comfortable in my old age. So, you know, it's interesting. All of a sudden I'm back in a situation where, well, there's no dinner. I can't buy a hamburger. I can't, you know, where's the bathroom at?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, now I got to drop down and sleep in on the ground. Oh, it's going to start
mm-hmm.
pouring down rain. So, and every time I do one of these kind of things, you know, where you kind of get outside of your normal world, it's such an amazing learning experience. You know, it's such an amazing learning experience. And unfortunately, so many people are so locked into their lives that they don't step out. I was just thinking about this. I was on my motorcycle. I got a bunch of different motorcycles down to a scooter, and I was actually on the scooter, which gets
mm-hmm.
like 60 miles to the gallon, and I'm going by the ARCO gas station, and there's
mm-hmm.
people lined up clear to the highway down here in Mill
mm-hmm.
Valley.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, man, you know what? The chances of anybody getting on a scooter in this line of people is zero. I mean, they just
yeah.
couldn't
yeah.
make that little move over there, and I'm just like, oh, my God, I would never go back to driving the car on a regular basis because, look, I'm getting 60 miles a gallon. I can park anywhere. I can,
mm-hmm.
you know, I can split the traffic if I need to. So I think a lot of people are so locked into their lives, and it's sometimes it's just by necessity and age. You know, I mean, there were times when I was working at Cheeseboro Ponds, or I worked at News Corp for Rupert Murdoch. I mean, okay, you're going into the city, New York City at on the 622 train, you know, you come
mm-hmm.
out on the 559 train, you take a shower, you drop face down, you're going to do the same thing tomorrow. And,
mm-hmm.
I mean, that's a part of life that's important. And but I think also you have to remember to try to step outside, not just in books, but, you know, get outside and try different things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I totally agree with you. And, you know, the thing is that it makes you feel fully alive when you do something new. All of a sudden you're really in the moment and you're going, wow. So, yeah, we finally got to go back up to Palisades Tahoe this year. We hadn't been up there for a while because of COVID and my husband getting a new knee at the beginning of 2020 and so on and so forth. And he's the creator of the Squaw Valley, well, it used to be Squaw Valley, but the Palisades posters, you know, the maps and the ski patrol maps.
Yeah.
So it was so exciting to finally get up there and get to see them in the stores and to go skiing again, although I need to take lessons again, I think, because I haven't done it in so long. It was scary, but it was exciting. It was both. And it reminded me of how much that makes you feel fully alive when you're doing something like that, where you have to be just in the moment. And you don't
Everybody's become so risk adverse that they don't want to try anything, you know. Now, for instance, at the end of the month here, I'm going to take my dive inflatable boat, which is 10.5 feet long. It's got a 15-horse motor. I'm going to take my camping gear. I'm going to Lake Powell, and I'm going to spend 10 days going up these arms. Now, there's all kinds of Anasazi ruins that nobody gets to. And you know what? The risk doing that is pretty much zero compared to the other stuff that I do. I mean, you know, you're in a boat, you know, how bad can it be? But, you know, when people talk to me, their eyes just go like, wow, that's unbelievable. And, you know, that's really affordable and doable. You go in the small boat, you're burning 3 gallons of gas a day, and you can take all the gear you want. And here you have an opportunity to see in Lake Powell what are amazing things, and also explore things like Anasazi or ancient ruins, which are play a heavy role in ice, and see them for, you know, without crowds and without gates and without all kinds of things, and it's no problem. And that's funny, it reminds me, obviously been to Italy, and you know, I'm in the Roman ruins and you're standing 100 yards away from them, and that's as close as you get. So I was in Istanbul, Turkey, and which is fabulous, by the way. I mean, if you want to go to the Middle East and be safe and see, I mean, this is crossroads of civilization. It's just Istanbul is unbelievable. And so guides say, hey, you want to see some Roman ruins? I said, yeah, sure. So we drove out. Well, here's this entire Roman city. And we just walked around the whole city, all through the aqueducts and everything. There's nobody there. It's not roped off. It was just a mind-blowing experience to be able to do that. And it just happened to be because I happened to be in Turkey, and you know, at the right time, this guy mentioned it, and bang. I know I said this at the literary dinner, and I started with this. You know, everybody wants to put all of the complications in front of living their life. And the reality is, as Woody Allen said, look, 90% of success is just showing up, right? You don't have to have everything planned out perfectly. And a lot of times I plan a lot, but I don't have it planned out perfectly. Now, my wife and I rode our bikes across the United States. We started in San Diego. We rode to St. Augustine, Florida, and then we rode down to Key West, and now we're up in Kitty Hawk, North Carolina. We didn't do it all at one time. We go 1 week a year, and we put our bikes in a bike box, throw them on the airplanes, and we stay in hotels, you know, and camp.
Oh.
And the first part of those trip, oh, my God, we were loaded down like mules, you know. We had must have 100 pounds of gear. So the bike was wobbling all over because, you know, we read the gear list. Oh, you better take this. You better take this. Well, you forget. Oh, you're driving by a Walmart every 5 seconds. Did you really need that 24 pounds of GORP? And now we have it down to a fine science. You know, we show up. My old college roommate, his wife, they caught up with us. They did. And now we do it as a foursome, and it's just a blast. You know, we get out. Now we're riding on flat ground because, of course, we're near the ocean. But we stay in hotels. We get to experience all kinds of stuff that in a car you'd never see, ever. And meet people, and they treat you great if they know you're on a bicycle. And the fact that you maybe have ridden across the United States, oh, my God. I mean, sometimes it's hard to get away. So, but that's not that difficult to do. It takes some effort. But, yeah, there's so many small things that you can do to really kind of jumpstart your life And if obviously writing is one way that is an outlet for me to sort of, because I really am in some sense the main character, Jack, who's a mountain guy. Now, I'm not a mountain guy, but I've done a lot of high altitude climbing, and he's done a lot of other stuff. So, you know, I had done all these tremendously interesting things, mm-hmm. and really didn't, you know, as I started to write, which I said was in the DNA. So you sort of just say, okay, you sit at a computer and you can't look at an empty screen. You know, a lot of this stuff just started to come out. And that's
right.
how, you know, we got to ICE, Genesis, and Revelation.
Yeah, you know, we've got less than 10 minutes left. And I'd like you to tell just a little bit about the ICE trilogy. And I also want to hear about the new book Vortex. I don't know when that's coming out, but you know, I was curious about that too. So what do you want to tell us? And also about self-publishing, just a little bit briefly about why you self-published, because that was something I found really interesting at the literary event. And I have to say that my favorite books I've read during the last couple of years have been self-published authors. So,
well, that is a very, very interesting journey. And actually, I had written ICE, mm-hmm. and I had come very close to selling it a couple of times. And in one instance, they said, okay, well, we need to see a second book before we buy ICE. So I wrote the second book called Ark, which was the same characters, but they were mm-hmm. actually in search of Noah's Ark in Iran. And then, of course, you know, everything turns upside down at these publishers, and they're like, oh, we're going a different direction. And a lot of publishers, were resistant to publish ICE. They liked the story because it involved numerous genres. Oh, wait a minute, there's a little sci-fi in there. Wait, there's adventure. There's a little romance.
Yeah, it doesn't fit in a category. Yeah.
Right, and this is what people, you know, really, when you read a book, what you read, for the most part, except for your top authors, is something that is reviewed by a committee. It fits into a very distinct box. It is rarely, if ever, the best writing that's out there. But you know what? If you're an editor, you never get fired for buying a book that fit in a box, even if it's not very good. You can get fired very quickly if you publish something that's sort of out of the mainstream. So I had gotten very close a few times, and I wasn't in a crush. I had my own marketing company, but I got an iPad in about 2012, I guess my first one, and mm-hmm. so I discovered the Kindle app. And I was like, wow, okay, this is the coolest thing. I always hate to go to the library because I forget to return the books. And so I'm reading along. You know, I'd have a stack. That was the same thing with, you know, videotapes. Oh, my God, I must have spent, never mind, in late fees. But I'm reading these books, and so I come across this guy, A.G. Riddle, Jerry Riddle, and who writes very similar stuff to what I do. And he was a web builder in 2011, and by around 2014, he'd already sold 3 million books.
Oh my God.
As an indie author. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And so I thought, wow. Oh, and he was making great money because on Amazon, you get paid 75% royalty based on the price that you set, right? You make all
right.
the decisions about that. And so I contacted Jerry, I said, hey, G, can you help me out here? He goes, oh, yeah, Kev, let me set you up and do this. And so he really helped formulate, you know, sort of how you navigate this world of indie publishing. Now, indie publishing now is very easy because Amazon will literally hold your hand, and they will do it for free. Okay, everybody mm-hmm. says, oh, how much is that going to cost me? It costs nothing. And
mm-hmm.
They will hold your hand and guide you through the publishing process without any trouble. Your responsibility as a writer is
mm-hmm.
to make sure that you use editors and other things to bring your manuscript up to the very best that you possibly can before you go to Amazon. So I have what I call my cabal. Right, I've got, and this is what I've learned through the school of hard knocks. Because see, in English, I never got more than a C ever. I mean, and ultimately, writing is about storytelling. It is not prose. You know, if you go to an MFA
right.
school, they'll oh, that is beautiful, and that stuff never sells. But
story.
What you know, what I did is I had to get a cabal, which took me some time. So I still have one of the best story editors on the planet at Stackler, who had worked for these publishers, and he works for a lot of top thriller authors. Mm-hmm. And I got another guy finally to do line editing, and I went to Fiverr. So my book cover I did for $5 on Fiverr. And so, you know, you get your cabal, but I'd like to encourage people who are interested in writing to sit down and start to hammer a few things out. And again, don't put the roadblocks up before you've even got started. Oh, I don't know how to do this. I don't know how to do that. Some of it's a school of hard knocks, and I work with writers like Dixie James and others to help mm-hmm. them nap. They've already published their books. They're either very good writers or best-selling authors, but they don't. Mm-hmm. They still don't understand, hey, how do we do an audio book here? You could do your audio book for free if you want through ACX, which is Audible, owned by Amazon. And mm-hmm. what you do is you can audition narrators, and they will split the profit with you on the book. But, you know, as far as ICE, you know, I lived in New Mexico.
Yeah. Kevin, we've only got 3 minutes left. I wish I had put you on for an hour.
We're going to have to do this again, I can see right now.
We will. We'll do it again. But during the last 3 minutes, what do you want to talk to our audience about? What do you want to most tell them the most during this last part of the show?
You know, I think the most important thing is that for people that are interested in writing, whether it be fiction, nonfiction, memoir, to really the tools are there to do it. And, mm-hmm. you know, for me, one of the biggest fears that I had was that I would die before Revelation got done, because I had committed to this trilogy, and I thought, oh, man, if I die before Revelation gets done, these readers are going to be at my house, and they're going to, you know, they can't kill me. I'm obviously already dead, but I don't know what else they can do. Because it's a legacy. You know,
yeah.
that writing will outlive you by 100 years, even if
yeah.
it's just stuff that your aunt, you know, that your kids or your grandkids read about.
Right.
You know, because who knows anything about their great-great-grandfather in today's world? Nobody. But, you know, if
yeah.
you wrote a memoir, just wrote about what your life is, you know, and people say, well, my life's not that interesting, and unfortunately, that's not true. Everybody's life is incredibly interesting, and particularly people who have just lived regular lives, but have, you know, everybody has to overcome some amazing problems in their lives, and they also have met incredible people in strange circumstances. So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, I would encourage everybody to not think of writing as something that Stephen King does, and then he has an agent, and he goes to sell it, and all this. And by the way, as far as agents go, you know, look, if an agent knew how to write, they'd be a writer. Okay, they
right.
won't be trying to sell your stuff. So don't necessarily get caught up in what these people who honestly don't know anything about writing are going to say. You know, you have to push through yourself and be true to yourself. And I think, you know, Jerry Riddle told me that, you know, and I think that's what you see in indie writing is people being true to the story. They're not slaves to an editor who says, oh, well, can you fix that? Can you change that character? I mean, you know, for better or for worse, we throw it out there. Now, if people
yeah.
read it, that
yeah.
is fantastic. But there's never a case in that situation where you say, oh, boy, I wish I'd done this or I wish I'd done that. But the editor wouldn't do that. And for people who write and are best-selling authors, you know, it is a very profitable business. You know, everybody thinks indie writers don't make any money. But in the case of, like, Riddle, now he's sold about 20 million books.
Oh, my gosh.
So he's made plenty of money. And unfortunately, you know, his wife likes Ferraris, but he just likes a Volkswagen. So, you know, I don't know what he's going to do with all that money. But it can be a highly profitable thing as well. But you know what? The writing should come from the heart and enjoy. Do it. And the other thing is just set, like, a schedule of 30 minutes a day, right? Don't
yeah.
try to kill yourself.
30 minutes or less. I said I'd show up for 10, 15 a day, and then 30 whenever I could. And that's how I wrote my book. You're right. Anyway,
no,
we're going to get cut off.
Because I had my own company. I wrote one page a day. I did it first thing in the morning. Finally decided I had to do that. One page, it took about 45 minutes. And, you know, in a year, that's 365 pages. So,
exactly.
You can only eat an elephant one piece at a time.
Exactly. And like you said, show up. Showing up is the most important thing. Thank you for all of the ways you're living your music. I am so glad you are, Kevin, and I'm so glad to have met you and had you on the show. And I just want to say, live your music means live from your heart, and that's what you're doing. You're living what your heart said to do, and you're leaving your legacy that way, too.
Well, I'll tell you, I've had to work hard, but I am definitely, I mean, I'm almost 65, and I'm still doing the same stuff I did when I was 25. So, you know, you can definitely do it, and but you got to just step outside the norm, for sure.
Yeah. Well, anyway, bye for now, Kevin, and thank you for living your music. Everyone out there, whatever your heart says to do, live your music. Bye.
Bye. Thanks, Margo.
Thank you.